a radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G.
Joe and George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah! On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
One of these teams will be over 500 by the end of the weekend. Will it be the Astros, who have won 9 of 11 since cutting Jose Abreu June 14th? They took 2 of 3 against the 25th place in all of baseball Tigers, 2 of 3 against the 29th place in all of baseball White Sox, 3 of 3 against the 3rd place in all of baseball Orioles, 2 of 2 against the 30th place of all of baseball Colorado Rockies. They have had a very easy schedule, and the Orioles. And ironically, the series where they were the most impressive was the one against those Baltimore Orioles, Joe.
It's been a very surprising turnaround, to say the least.
Yeah.
Like think back, the Detroit series is good, but then you have that first game with the White Sox, and it just feels like everything is going to unravel once again. The vibes are bad. And then the White Sox play little league level quality baseball against you. But that's where really feels like things are turning around. They've handled it this month very well. They've had performances from guys like Eric Eddy, who've been terrible, but then you've seen really good bounce back performances. You've continued to have injuries, which is crazy. Kyle Tucker, Justin Verlander.
Tucker's been out since June 3rd.
Yeah, I don't understand.
I don't know how they're doing it.
The more I think about it, I don't understand how Kyle Tucker's still not playing.
I don't either, and hopefully he's back soon. I mean, I do understand how they've won 9 of 11. They've played three really bad teams. Honestly, they should have won 10 of 11 because they should have swept the White Sox. You can make the case they should have won 11 of 11 if you really want to get greedy. But they have a chance, if they win 2 of 3 this weekend, to be back over 500. And I'm curious as to how many people believe that what they've done is more impressive than what the New York Mets have done. The Mets have won 11 of 13, everyone is saying, since Grimes threw out the first pitch. That turned the Mets season around. They won 11 of 13 since June 12th. Winning 2 of 3 against the Marlins, 27th best team in baseball. Sweeping the Padres, 12th best team in baseball. 2 of 3 against the Rangers, 24th best team in baseball. Wow, Rangers. 2 of 3 against the Cubs, 22nd best team in baseball. 2 of 2 against the Yankees, 4th best team in baseball, but they're 2-8 in their last 10. That's a slightly more impressive resume than the Astros, but they too are beating up on bombs.
It's Patrick Bateman style. It's slight. The Mets is technically more impressive, but you have the Yankees in their worst stretch of baseball of the season. But the Astros, like, it's the 29th and 30th place teams in baseball, the White Sox and the Rockies, is part of this.
Yeah.
So and you know, the Mets is a little bit longer. It's semantics here, but it's 11 out of 13, so they've done a couple more games since Grimes threw out the first pitch versus when Abreu was cut. So I give the Mets the slight edge of what's technically more impressive, just based on if you average out standings of where these teams are at the moment. But the Astros run's been very good. The Mets is just, I would say, like 2% better.
2% better?
Just a little bit. Just a teeny tiny bit.
2%. Okay. Yeah.
Not, you know.
The 2% milk that would go in a Grimes milkshake.
Mm.
Although I don't really know how a milkshake is made. Do they use whole milk?
I think.
Is it ice cream?
Probably whole milk.
I would assume that it's, since it's McDonald's ingredients, we're talking the finest ingredients out there.
What is the flavor of a Grimace? What's a purple milkshake taste like?
Probably tastes like purple, you know? Like those koozies that you might have had when you were a little kid.
Koozies?
Yeah, you ever had those? Those little things that look like grenades?
No.
Oh, okay.
I know what you're talking about.
Oh.
The thing with the foil top.
Foil top, yeah.
And then, yeah.
I think they're called koozies.
I don't know what they're called, but I know I can pick. I think they're actually supposed to be barrels, not grenades, but yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay, yes. Okay. When you said barrels, it made more sense to me. Yes. Apparently, it's blueberry flavor.
Blueberry flavor.
Gross. And apparently, it's a quarter or 3/4 of a cup of any milk.
Oh, choose your own adventure?
I guess. Whatever they got in there.
Okay. So it's not ice cream. I used to think that milkshakes were just ice cream.
This is the recipe for if you want to recreate it at home.
Oh, you can recreate a Grimace milkshake at home? It'd probably be better if you recreate it at home.
Probably healthier.
Yeah, well, one of the ingredients is handful of blueberries. So I can't imagine that they...
Handful?
Well, A, Yeah, give me a number. B, I can't imagine that they're doing that at the back of the at the McDonald's, that they have a handful of blueberries that they're throwing in there.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like fresh fruit really fits. Outside of like the apples you get in the kids' meal, fresh fruit doesn't really seem to be their forte.
No, definitely
at McDonald's.
It definitely doesn't. Chick-fil-A's got good fruit. I don't know if you've ever had their fruit
cups. They do.
Their fruit cups rule.
Chick-fil-A's elite.
Not even fast food. That's how
good
it is.
It's not. It's not.
I had it twice this week. Been a little fatty boom batty this week. And Chick-fil-A, love it.
I also had it twice this week.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been going for breakfast.
The chicken minis are amazing.
Yeah. I've been going with like the egg white sandwich that they do.
Oh, interesting.
Well, it's a little healthier.
Is it?
That's what their menu says.
The funny thing is, with a lot of these things that advertise as healthy, it's like, oh, it's a salad.
Todd, the show says Huggies, not
that's Huggies. What they are. You're right. Sorry. The drink I was talking about are called Huggies. Because, yeah, they are like all sorts of different colors. Purple was one of those colors. What is that purple coming from?
They had red, orange.
Radioactive blue.
Yeah.
Radioactive pink.
Also, observation from last night, Paul brings his own koozies places.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you should.
We got beer at the same time.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you had a koozie on yours.
Yeah,
and I was like, did they hand that out to him?
No.
And I was like, no, Paul, you brought your own.
You got to bring a koozie out. You don't do that?
I'm going to start.
Am I a weirdo for doing that?
I don't know, but you've inspired me.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a weirdo or if it's a expert move.
I think if you go out and you think you're going to have something from a can or a bottle, you should have one in your pocket. I actually, for a bachelor party, one of my buddies, this was in Austin, gave me this awesome koozie. It was great. It was leather and naturally it had the Texas flag on it, and naturally I lost it.
I was
had my
say,
name on it too.
I feel like you That's run tough. The risk of losing the koozie that you bring
so,
on the road.
So what you should do is you should just have a big, like, I have a drawer and it's just koozies in
yeah
it. And it's like from weddings and stuff like that. But no, you gotta have a koozie when you go out. I'm telling you, these are Paul Gallant party
yeah
tricks.
No, yeah. Might implement that in my game going
yeah
forward.
I think
Lone Ranger says he keeps four in his car. Todd the Show says it's not weird. Sensei says I also keep four in my car.
Huh.
I think I'm going to have to start.
You definitely have to start.
Yeah, no, yeah. I've never seen that move. Like,
I
got, out.
Yeah, I need to like clean out my koozie drawer. Yeah. I got a bunch in that I can't use anymore.
I think you start.
That have past
Paul,
radio stations I used to work at.
Oh.
Yeah.
That was probably going to get trashed.
Paul, correct me if I'm wrong, but you do the ones that you're not as attached to are the road koozies, right?
No, I actually like to bring out ones that I think are cool.
Really?
Well, you know me. I'm a little metro. I like to have a stylish koozie
yeah
as well.
I mean, if you got a good koozie and you're a single man like Paul.
I have a Houston Oilers one.
Well, it might be a conversation starter.
Yeah, but I value it. I would want to, that this one doesn't leave the house.
But well, again, if it doesn't leave the house, then I mean, you don't really need a koozie in the house.
Yeah.
I guess not, but.
Like, you use a koozie at home, Sean?
Not really.
From the 281 alcoholic
at my
move
house.
Hey.
No,
we're trying our best. Okay, we're trying our best.
It's not an alcoholic move.
The person is really looking down on all of us. We're just trying to keep our drink cool.
That's all right.
I found one. The party that I went to in Austin a couple of weeks ago, I found a koozie at the place I was at, and it's a. There's an, apparently in Austin a DWI attorney, and it says "Call Paul" on it.
Now that is a good idea.
I was like, "Oh, that's amazing!" I'm sorry, I got to take this from
that,
the run out.
That's good branding right there.
Better call Paul. Speaking of alcoholics, if you're behind the wheel and you have too much and you get in trouble, 713-780-3776 to call in to text in. If you want to talk about the Astros and Bats, we want this thing to just get started. A big series, two box office flops that are all of a sudden turning around in the European market. You can discuss that. We discussed the biggest, I think, most embarrassing thing that's happened in sports in recent history with Bronny being drafted by the Los Angeles Lakers. But something else happened yesterday that some people that did internet digging discovered is maybe one of the more jarring stories that we've seen in basketball of late. We'll discuss that next. Gallant and George on a Friday, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Paul and Joe inside the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Big series for your beloved Houston Astros this weekend. Two hottest teams in baseball facing off in Queens. The Mets have won 11 of 13 since Grimes threw out the first pitch June 12th. The Astros have won 9 of 11 since releasing Jose Abreu June 14th. Very excited for the start of this one tonight. Earlier today, Joe and I discussed Bronny James being drafted by the Los Angeles Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
It is a move that is so effing transparent. Nepotism to try to keep LeBron James around. Nepotism certainly does happen in sports and in the NBA, front offices from time to time with players. This one, though, in particular, it feels like the Lakers got strong-armed into drafting a player's son. And
yeah,
I think it's a horrible look. I'm sure there's others out there that don't feel that way. You're going to bring up other examples, but we're not talking about, you know, Del Curry's son who ends up being better.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about Ken Griffey's son who ends up being better. We're talking about a son who is definitively worse. How could he be better than his father, the greatest basketball player of this era?
Well, he's also, he's not even as good as his brother. I kind of feel bad for the other brother.
Well, I don't. He's going to have less pressure on him.
They are saying, well, he's going to go, he'll go in the first round.
Maybe.
Most likely.
Maybe. I don't know. Because Bronny might be out. Or excuse me, LeBron might be out by then,
This kid's supposed to be actually like a really good. I think he's going to be a senior.
I think he's like 16.
Yeah, he's
okay.
Senior,
so we got 3 years. Is LeBron going to be in the NBA?
No,
but clearly Bronny's the favorite.
But his reputation is almost tarnished now because Bronny gets ran out of the NBA as soon as LeBron leaves. And you're going to have this other kid who actually might be a good basketball prospect, and as soon as he gets drafted, like let's say he goes in the first round, he's a lottery pick. People are just going to say, "Oh, it's just another LeBron kid." Like I feel bad for that kid too. Is it more embarrassing that what the Lakers did or what ESPN did? Because I think the push notifications is for a second-round pick. They made sure – like, think about this. In the first round of the NBA draft, because Nielsen doesn't care about Canada, they went to commercial break when the Toronto Raptors were on the clock and when they went to pick. They missed it. They missed the pick on television. They made sure they were on TV yesterday when Bronny got picked. Like – I'm sure it's clicks. I'm sure there's draft guys who they put a Bronny story up and people care. But you're doing push notifications for a second-round pick?
Like, yeah, why? Three in particular. I mean, I normally get push notifications for WNBA stories, and this was before Caitlin Clark got drafted, and now they're doing it for this. Yeah, I'll admit that that was more annoying than the Lakers doing something that I kind of thought was going to happen, and that also I do think is a little bit funny because – I don't like the Lakers.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that's fair to say that the three push notifications by ESPN for this and the filming of the celebration, LeBron toasts his son being drafted. I mean, that
you
one.
Could, I can actually make the case that this helps ESPN's business or this helps the bottom line, whereas the Lakers actually drafting Bronny James doesn't help the bottom line. So I understand what ESPN's doing. I get it. Bronny James got drafted in the second round. Jamal Shedd got drafted in the second round. Who else? that's the point.
Well, the Mormon kid?
There's another kid. Okay. And that's who we're about to talk about.
So we know one guy because he played basketball here. We know one guy because his dad is LeBron James.
And another guy because he played at Duke.
And another guy because he – I think, honestly, if the story didn't come out, we would have forgotten who he was.
And this is what we were about to discuss because this should be a much bigger deal than what we're talking about with Bronny because this is so damn juicy and with so many questions that need to be answered. Kyle Filipowski, for those who don't know, big man at Duke, 7 feet tall, very skilled player. Like probably more skilled, you would say, than Zach Edey and more skilled than Donovan Clingan.
He was the guy who flopped.
Flopped allegedly while in the crowd and supposedly hurt his knee, and it led to Jay Billis going on the warpath saying that fans need to stop storming the court.
And he limped off the court and missed zero games.
Yep.
Yes. But anyway, the details about Kyle Filipowski are very interesting because people are wondering, wait, a guy like this, how do you fall out of the first round? And I actually think that's a great question. I don't know that much about Filipowski's game, but he's 7 feet tall and apparently can shoot.
Mm-hmm.
So, wait, we're not drafting this guy in the first round? So apparently, one of the reasons for Filipowski following had to do with how he did, I guess, at the NBA draft when it came to his tryout and his interviews. Because a lot of the interviews were centered on his girlfriend. Kyle Filipowski is 20. Kyle Filipowski's girlfriend is 28. And they've been dating for a bit. And on Twitter, in response to a couple of clips that blew up talking about Filipowski falling in the draft, users claiming to be related to Filipowski, we're talking a brother, we're talking a mother, said that this woman, who's 7 years older than Filipowski, began a romantic relationship with him when he was still in high school. I don't know how many people are familiar with Utah. For those who don't know, Utah is largely a state where the Church of Latter-day Saints is the predominant religion. For those who don't know, that's the Mormons. And weirdly, Filipowski, who's dating this woman who's 7 years older than him from Utah, has been drafted by the Utah Jazz. I don't know all the specifics. All I know is that people claiming to be Filipowski's family are saying that this woman has taken advantage of Filipowski, and maybe that's one of the reasons that he fell as far as he did in the draft. And Danny Ainge ends up getting a guy who's sort of been taken in the first round.
Yeah.
Once again, continuing to win the draft. But I really want to know more about this. That's all we have at this moment in time. But this as a reason for a guy falling to the second round is a pretty, pretty compelling one.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because so she's 24 when she's going to his prom, which is bizarre.
That is
the brother alleges that Duke staff and coaches are involved in this in some capacity with why he is estranged from his family. The whole situation is just bizarre. Think about Jalen Green, Dre Michelle, who is now suing Tyrod Taylor because he's kicking her out of their house.
Oh,
apparently they have a kid together.
Oh, no way. I didn't know that. Texans legend, Tyrod Taylor.
She's 40, and she's having Jalen Green's kid. Jalen Green is, what, 22, 23? It's a 17-year age gap.
But that age gap is different, though, because
he's already in the NBA.
And he's of legal age.
He's of legal age.
It's still weird.
So, but you would think that in the NBA, where stuff like this is so common, where you've got all these young NBA players dating much older Kardashians, that this situation might not be as bizarre. But I think it's the estranged family part of it.
That
to me is the red flag. And it sounds she is forcing him to no longer be in contact with his family.
Which would also be very interesting if true, and how are we going to figure that out? So this all just dropped on the internet yesterday, and I guess it hadn't really been talked about a lot until yesterday, until the Filipowski family, or at least people claiming to be part of Kyle Filipowski's family, decided to speak out. And look, there's a lot of stuff that I don't quite understand about the Church of Latter-day Saints, and I respect everybody's right to, you know, practice your religion, whatever it might be. It is definitely strange in the eyes of a lot of people. There's a South Park episode about it, for God's sakes. So just understand that, and I don't know all of the intricacies of it. I do know that, you know, BYU, a Mormon university in Utah, has very strict codes when it comes to premarital sex and things like that. I believe Baylor has some similar ones, but maybe it's less enforced at Baylor than it is at BYU, and it does make me wonder, okay, like just for the actual state itself and the way that the Church of Latter-day Saints rolls, what might have been going on when you've got a 24-year-old going to the prom with a high school kid? It's a crazy story, and really does feel like this is the only explanation that makes sense as to why Filipowski fell to the second round, ironically, to a Utah team. I mean, it's all of it turning into this. Someone, please, for the love of God, do an investigative story on this, if you can.
Yeah.
Because I'm so fascinated by this. I don't the Bronny story, it's embarrassing. But there's not much to it. We know what it is.
This is way more interesting.
This is so fascinating. And I need to know the details.
Yeah, because because
I'm nosy.
Jonathan Givony was on Zach Lowe's podcast.
He's getting crushed, Givony is.
Why?
He's getting crushed for essentially acting like it's not that big of a deal what Filipowski off the court is doing. And he's getting crushed because he's being accused of, oh, he's okay with groomers, which is one of the vogue terms online these last couple of years.
Okay, we have breaking news.
We have breaking news.
Is it Kyle Filipowski related?
No, it's Paul Gallant related.
What happened?
I don't know what you're talking about, my man. My hand was killing me after that. Good to meet you. God bless. From Luke Berryhill.
Did he
replied to your tweet.
You responded?
just replied to your tweet. And showed up on my Twitter feed right away.
He doesn't need to keep telling me that. I know it was a terrible first pitch.
No, it hurt his head.
I know it was a terrible first pitch. I know it was a terrible first pitch.
He's making this so much worse for you.
He told me it was the best first pitch he's gotten
all year.
And now
he's saying his hand was killing him. He's got soft hands.
I want to bring Luke Berryhill on the show now.
I think we have to.
I need to tell him, no, don't say that. That was a terrible first pitch, and I threw it like a girl.
I don't think he played. I think it was a late scratch last night because his hand was suffering.
Shut up.
That's why Omar Narvaez.
No. My first pitch was garbage. It was garbage. It looks terrible, and I'm embarrassed by it.
I'm going to trust a pro athlete here and say it was not.
He's not a pro athlete.
He is the nicest person, okay? He made me feel so big for that moment, which, of course, Jeremy took away from me by saying that he got it,
so
too.
Funny.
It's not funny.
I'm so glad he responded. Because now I can't wait to see your response. You can't just ignore it.
I'm going to tell him what I said. Like, Luke, I threw it like a girl. It's okay. You don't have to... You don't have to pat me on the back.
I mean,
we have to get him on next
week. Well, this is date updates. This is you go on a first date.
I do have a first date tonight.
You show her
I'm actually very excited about this first
pro
date.
Pro baseball
tonight.
Player Luke Berryhill says, I throw so hard I hurt his hand.
Maybe don't show the video.
Don't show the video.
Oh, I already showed her the video.
Okay.
No, she objectified me when I sent her the video, and I was like, see, this is the kind of girl I like.
Oh, because that's why you wore the short shorts.
I mean, that wasn't why. I just wear short shorts now. People, you want to shame me for short shorts? I'm bringing the 80s back.
I'm just saying you strategically wore them.
No. I didn't even think I was going to send her the video. She was texting me during the game, and I was like, yeah, all right. And she made a comment. She asked me if I'm Italian because I got a donk. Apparently Italian men have donks. I don't know. Sorry, I'm generalizing
here.
That's
a stereotype I didn't know.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. What's your favorite stereotype? 713-780-3776. I'm just kidding. But I do want to hear more about this Kyle Filipowski story.
It's same.
We all do.
So many questions.
It is one of the more fascinating stories I've seen. And the fact that he got drafted to Utah makes me wonder if we actually will have anyone dive deep down the rabbit hole. For those who don't know, the Church of Latter-day Saints, they got a lot of money. They got a lot of money, and there's a lot of people that work in Utah that I would imagine know that they got to be careful with what they do when it comes to investigating something like this. Again, I'm not saying there's a conspiracy or anything like that. This is just a very, especially because it's all in Utah and it's staying in Utah. This is the most Utah story ever.
Yeah, it's because it's like there's undertones of like Mormon recruiting, basically, that it is. It's a very strange story. We need. Someone from a credible reporter from a credible outlet to like write a story
that
about
has
this.
No connection to the NBA.
Yeah, so that
like,
we
that's
can
why
separate
I don't want...
like the rumor, because this is kind of where like the Josh Giddey story fell, where there's like it was like internet rumors and internet policing or internet investigation.
Yeah,
and then when the actual investigation happened, there's just like, huh.
Well, and
the family didn't press charges, so there's nothing really we can do.
But the reality is that if someone outside of an NBA like circle, so like that's why I would remove Jonathan Givony from this, you wouldn't like call this victim blaming if he fell to the second round with he's 15 years old dating a 24 year old and then falls in the second round of it. Like the family's accusing her of grooming. Think if this was flipped. If this was a male and a woman, but flipped ages, this would be a much different story. So like I'm
Josh Giddey-esque.
Curious what the response will be from the NBA if they're basically like, yeah, he got groomed by a woman 10 years older than him, so he fell in the second round.
And that is a very touchy word, but if you're looking on the outside.
Well, that's what the supposed family members.
The family is yeah. You're right. So we'll see. I'm fascinated by it. It is Gallant and George. He's Joe George. I'm Paul Gallant. We got Sean Mapes behind the glass. Coming up next, we continue our countdown to the start of the NFL season. 69, nice, days away. Who's the best number 69 in NFL history? This is actually tricky. I definitely know the most famous Houston Texan to wear the number. You'll hear it next. Stick around.
We're ready for some football, baby.
And hush!
The countdown to the NFL season continues with Paul Gallant and Joe George.
69 days away. Nice. Did you know that Chester Pitts wore number 69? Honestly, I did not know that Chester Pitts wore 69 for the Houston Texans until yesterday. What a story that is. San Diego State, I believe he didn't want to play football. They actually could make a movie out of that. I'm surprised they haven't.
That's like before my time, obviously, in Houston. So what I know Chester the most from is The Amazing Race. I won't lie. I
forgot he was on that.
Yeah.
Chester Pitts was, and his Wikipedia shows up right away. Chester Pitts was a devoted oboist who had never played organized football.
Oboist.
And he was convinced to join, I believe, the San Diego State football team. He played so well, the Texans drafted him in the second round of the 2002 NFL draft.
Interesting.
Might have been the best pick in that draft, because that was their inaugural draft, and David Carr didn't really work out so well. Plus, on top of that, the expansion pick of Tony Boselli, first overall. That didn't work so well either.
It's crazy that they're like, let's start this new team with David Carr and an oboist.
Hey, but Chester Pitts, oboist turned NFL offensive lineman.
At the time, it was probably hard for Charlie Casterly to be like, yep, love it. Yep, new team. A guy who's played football for 5 years. And it worked out.
It did work out.
It's so weird thing back to the expansion draft. I wonder how it'll feel weird now, like really weird now when they do it. Because I just feel like we know NFL teams so much more collectively. You know the lower level players because of fantasy sports and just the way the coverage is, that when players are getting selected, there'll be way more takes about just.
Or even just, like, when they announce who's protected and who's eligible to get drafted and stuff, we'll be like, wait, what?
Yeah. Like John Mechie not protected by the Texans? They'll do good YouTube numbers, Paul.
I don't know about that.
Maybe not. Okay. Maybe Damian Pierce.
There's not one player that's worn number 69 to get into the NFL Hall of Fame. Not one. Shout out to our Sugarland Space Cowboy friend.
AJ Blue Ball.
Thank you. Jared Allen is close.
He's going to get in.
He'll get it.
He's got close to 200 sacks. I think he's got 169. Nice.
Wow. Committed. He's committed.
That would be amazing. Stink, a.k.a. Mark Schlereth.
Yep.
Longtime Denver Bronco also. John Runyon, who was once considered the dirtiest player in the NFL, former Eagles tackle. And David Bakhtiari from the Green Bay Packers, one of Aaron Rodgers' besties. Let's go around the league. It seems the Jaguars have a very meddlesome owner. So we talked about some Shad Khan comments yesterday, talking about how disappointed he was that the team could not win two games down the stretch after an 8-3 start. Well, he also had this to say about an offseason where the Jaguars were very, very, very active. They signed Eric Armstead, who the Texans were supposedly interested in for a while since he played in San Francisco. Wide receiver Gabe Davis. Center Mitch Morse. Safety Darnell Savage. But Khan said he does not want this to be the long-term approach to roster building. Quote, I think there's a sea change for us, and this is for our coaching, that they have to develop young players. Our solution isn't going to be we're going to be signing free agents every year. We don't have that ability. Bottom line, that young talent has to be developed. The coaching staff, their priorities have to change. Their mindset has to change. Whoa.
Interesting. That sounds like someone who's getting a new stadium that can't afford free agents.
But they have money. Shad Khan's rich. Shad Khan's one of the richest owners in the NFL, based off of net worth, from what I understand.
That's an interesting quote for him to publicly say that.
He's not done. Do you want to see more, Joe? So, when asked about play calling duties for the Jaguars this season, Doug Peterson and Press Taylor shared the job in 2022. Press Taylor had it full time last year for the first time. Doug Peterson hasn't said who's calling plays this year. Shad Khan says, when asked about who he wants to call plays this year, yeah, I have an opinion, but I don't want to tell people we need to do it because then things don't work out. They look at me and say, we did it because you wanted it. I mean, this is Jerry Jones adjacent.
Part of the reason why I find this so interesting is that this is the same owner who allowed his son to take a bump in his wrestling company and wear a neck brace on television during the draft. And then they got the NFL Network to play along and interview him about it. Like, you're literally using the NFL draft as a way to promote your wrestling
for
company.
For fake wrestling clout. Because this is not even the WWE.
No,
this
it's
is
AEW. It's the minor leagues, basically.
Yeah.
And then this guy says this? Like, pick a lane.
A little nepotism.
Big time nepotism. I'm sure his dad really owns AEW, and Tony, the son, is just kind of
the operating officer. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is his title that they gave him.
It's a sandbox to play in. Let's be honest. He grew up loving wrestling. I'll pay for a wrestling company for him to pretend like he's Vince McMahon. Only in the good ways, please.
Yeah.
And have fun doing that. Yeah, you'll wear neck brace in the draft room. Who cares? Your computer isn't even plugged in. Like, why? You could ask the question, why is this guy even in the draft room?
For the pit. Like, it's the only reason. Because it really feels like he had a wrestling company, so he would stay away from the football team. Like, what a bizarre.
I'm very happy that we're no longer saying these things about Cal McNair.
Well, he never owned a wrestling company. We'd probably like him more if he did that.
I don't know. I don't think we would necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, Cal.
I'd like him more.
Cal. The only weird thing about Cal is you go back to the video game store.
No, there's nothing weird about playing video games.
Sitting on the floor.
What's wrong with sitting on the floor?
In your office playing video games with a backup quarterback.
And why
it's
not?
Kind of bizarre behavior.
No, that's he understands his players.
I mean,
He relates to the common man.
He gets unnecessary.
Something his dad never did.
Yeah. He gets unnecessary grief for the grilling and the barbecuing. Like, I don't know why people like make fun of him so much for that.
I mean, it's a little try hard, but hey, whatever.
Yeah. It's a little bit of like, it's obvious that a PR company was like, this is your bit, hold the spatula.
Yeah.
They've done a very good job in the last 2 years of seeming like, one, they actually, one, listen to their fans, but two, interact with their fans. And Hannah deserves a lot of credit for that. But Cal also deserves a lot of credit for that. And we're not talking about Cal McNair in the same way we talk about Jim Irsay, son of Bob Irsay with the Indianapolis Colts, or the way that we're talking about Tony, I wore neck brace, Khan, so that I could promote minor league wrestling while running the show for my dad.
I've never told you I have one Cal McNair interaction.
Mm-hmm.
When I was working at Lids.
Yeah.
In the gallery.
Wow. Oh, he came in?
They came in.
No way.
And
what
he bought his nephew.
Uh-huh.
A Texans mini helmet. I found it so bizarre.
You're probably just walking through the
I know, but that the owner of the Texans is like, yeah, I need this, and I can't just have it for free.
He's supporting local business.
I guess so.
But Joe is acting like he could have just gotten this for free.
It was just so bizarre, because I'm behind the register.
That's the kind of money the Texans
miserable
have.
With my life.
I can't.
Like, trying to pretend like I'm in radio, but making like $10 an hour. And I look up, and I'm like, I'm probably going to trash you tonight when I get on the radio.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. The guy is supporting local business. He clearly has enough money that he can buy.
Philadelphia-based business.
He can buy. It's a business in the Galleria.
You're right.
They need to get their inventory so that they can employ, I don't know, you, sir. Pay your Cal McNair was paying your salary.
Yeah, that mini helmet bought 2 hours of Joe Jordan's
right.
time.
And it was making more there than I was at the radio station. So thank you, Cal. It was just so bizarre. Like, I was like looking down. I was like, look up and like, I see the mustache. I was like, oh. I was like, startled. I just never thought I'd be like at Lids. And I was like, Cal McNair be standing in front of me. It was a weird moment.
One of my best friends apparently saw them in Aspen the other day.
Oh.
That's a more normal place.
That's a more normal place.
But man of the people. Because he talked with them for a little bit, as did Hannah. Will Levis is refining his mechanics, by the way, whatever that means.
Good luck.
Sick. Love it.
I mean, he should refine, one, his password on his phone. Two, he should refine running and diving headfirst into traffic, only to end up 3 yards short of a first down.
Yes, his football IQ could use some reworking.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
Yeah. Anyway, it's Galan and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. The password, though, dude. The password.
I was just going to blow past that.
Yeah, and maybe, you know,
really blow past.
Take the peel off the banana.
It's Galan and George.
It's weird behavior.
It's Galan and George. Coming up next. Hey. Speaking of football, the United States of America lost to a country it created yesterday. Not good. We'll discuss. Stick around.
You're listening to Galant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Paul Galant and Joe George.
For those who don't know, way back in the day, the United States may or may not have used the Civil War or something like that to help create the country of Panama and then build a canal that went through Panama to make it easier to ship things west.
Okay.
Well, this country, Panama, beat us yesterday in soccer.
Oh, I thought you were going to say football.
2-1. Well, football.
I was worried about after the Japan team that beat the American football.
It's been
team.
A rough 2 days for American football and football.
And football.
So what happened was Tim Weah got a red card in the 18th minute after extending his hand and striking Panama defender Roderick Miller in the back of the head in an off-ball incident. Yellow card at first was changed to a red card by center official Ivan, Russian, Barton. I think this was going to inflame tensions between the United States and Russia for sure.
I think people are going to be upset about this.
Well, people are upset about the U.S. losing. Everyone seems to hate the United States manager. I don't follow soccer closely enough to know whether or not that hatred of him is merited. But more than anything, Joe, I am fascinated by how consistently we will point at a coach for the struggles of a team. And this also relates to the Houston Astros, who are now at 500 and have a chance this weekend to take 2 of 3 from the New York Mets. Both teams red hot.
Mm-hmm.
So many people pointed the finger at Joe Espada to this point this year. So many people pointed at Dusty Baker for the Astros' issues last year. This is not to say that both have never done anything poorly over the course of their time running the Houston Astros. I just find it fascinating that we always get really mad at managers when, honestly, it seems like the person to get mad at for this game is the guy who slapped somebody in the back of the head in the 18th minute so that the team was playing one man down. Actually scored a goal, by the way, to take a lead before things equalized 4 minutes later, and then they lost in the 93rd minute.
It is funny with American men's soccer. This more than anything else, I feel that they're always complaining about the manager. It always feels that they're the only ones to blame, when in reality, it's clearly the developmental system. Our best athletes don't play soccer. They're not playing soccer from a young age in these, like, in these schools, basically, that kids in Europe are and all over the world. But they always do seem to blame the manager. I think it's just easy. It's harder to blame the players as a fan. Because you always want to root for the player more. Your rooting interest is always in the player. And it's really challenging for a coach in any sport, I think, to get that support behind him. I think you have to be a championship level coach, D'Amico Ryans, a former player, someone that had that passion from the fans. And that's why coaches, I think, always get the blame, no matter what.
Football is the only sport where they should get the blame. I mean, you have to be in charge of a roster of, in college, up to 100 players, in the NFL, 53. You have to get the most out of all of them. You have to delegate to the right people. It is a hard job. And I feel like with football, coaching should be criticized the most. But with basketball, is it really Darvin Ham's fault that the Lakers underachieved this year? No, of course it's not. Is it really Joe Espada's fault that the Astros are struggling to this point? No, they've played poorly. There have been some decisions by Espada that you're frustrated by, but, I mean, the Jose Abreu thing also, that's not his fault.
Yeah.
Football's really the only one where I think it's justifiable to routinely get mad at coaches. And I suppose in soccer you can do the same thing, but soccer's one of these sports. I'm sure Glenn Davis can tell better than the two of us. It's one of those sports where the players are on the field. You can't really stop it. The game just goes on and on. You could have some plays on free kicks and corner kicks and stuff like that. But for the most part, it's the responsibility of the players that are out there. Once the kickoff happens, it's on these players. And okay, you could develop them, you could put them in the right spot or whatever. But
your game plans and stuff like that. But most of the time, a coach is not at fault. It's the players or it's the general manager. It's the guys who put those players on the roster, like guys like Jose Abreu, or a lack of talent on offense or defense in the NFL, or it's on the players for not executing. Like, they are the ones in charge.
All of the U.S. players these days are supposedly starters on legitimate teams in Europe or wherever country they're playing. This is the first time we've ever had that. Is it really the fault of the coach? And I am asking this as a person who is not a football savant. I just feel like it's very convenient to point at the coach. But in a game where a player got mad and slapped somebody in the back of the head and played a man down for 70-plus minutes, I mean, isn't it the player's fault? Isn't it that specific player's fault?
It's something where Greg Berhalter's, like, his tactics have been in question, and
sure,
and who and the subs he brings on and when have been questioned since before the last World Cup. So it is something where he's viewed as having nothing he did, but he is now in charge of the most talented American team ever, and they get the same results that they've always gotten.
Yeah, exactly, and that's why.
That's why the finger gets pointed at him.
Yeah.
It's because he didn't develop these guys. He got the job.
Maybe he's a bad coach, but they really do this. Every World Cup, every Olympics, when Team USA men's soccer fails, they blame the coach. And there's new coaches coming every 8 years at a minimum, it feels like. And it's always the coach's fault. It's always the coach's fault. And they're this talented and this talented, and they're playing this guy instead of this guy. And it's like, at some point, like maybe it's just we're not good at soccer.
I mean, that's really what I think it is. Chulupa Batman says formation, position coaching, building a team identity. Yeah, I mean, you have to do all of those things, but is that why they lost yesterday? To me, they lost because they were playing a man down for, what, do a little math here, 70 divided by 9. I mean, we're talking about upper 70%. Upper 70%, we're talking of the game. They were playing a man down. I don't care who you're playing against, that's really hard. And I feel like we want to blame Berhalter for whatever we possibly can, and it probably is fair to blame Berhalter for a lot, just like it was with
Bradley
and Klinsmann before.
Because they let his contract expire after the World Cup, and people were like, "Cool, so they'll get a new coach,"
and they didn't,
and then they just bring him back. And so there is a little bit of
So what Joe was saying with the general manager, it's like it's a federation problem.
It's like
yes,
hire
because
a new coach.
The federation. You talk about nepotism.
Oh yeah.
Oh, do tell. Because honestly, again, we're
all it is favor trading and among people that if you're somehow involved in U.S. soccer 30 years ago, you or your family member is still involved in U.S. soccer today, and it's just they don't really seek out any new ideas. And like Joe, you were saying the with the development system, not interested investing in that. It's more of, I mean, you look at the best player on the team, Christian Pulisic, where did he get developed? Well, his family went to Germany
to
have him developed. Uh-huh. All these guys, they went to Europe to get developed. They didn't stay here and get developed.
A text in shows y'all don't know about the USMNT. Yeah, hand up. Again, I admit that. I'm not trying to say that I don't. All I'm saying is everyone's mad at the coach, and a guy smacked somebody in the back of the head in the 18th minute and got ejected.
That's what
I'm thinking about.
Compared to, it's like, it is a lot. Dell and I talk about this all the time. It is like a college football program where the fan base hates its coach. And so now after every loss, this is the coach's fault, because the coach really should get fired. It just hasn't happened yet. And so now every loss is it says a lot about the coach. It's an indictment on what the coach has done and the culture and the management of the talent that he, again, just has. Because this is the difference between a regular team. Like, if the Astros stink, and yes, they can blame Joe Espada, they can also blame, like, the players. We need new players. For national soccer, there's no new players coming up. There's no trades we can make. I'm sorry. This is kind of, you have to make do with what you have. And again, he has the best roster of any U.S. coach of all time. And he does the same exact thing with
it. Is there any chance he doesn't make it to the World Cup?
There's a chance. Okay. If they don't make it out of the group, there's a chance. But again, now, and you're asking the U.S. Soccer Federation to make the right choice in A, fire him, make the right choice in B, hire the right guy.
Yeah.
I got the right choice.
That's what you're asking.
I got the right choice. Now he's doing a little TV for TBS this fall.
Oh.
Pawpaw. Think Papa
Dusty Baker?
Papa can't coach the U.S. men's national team. Papa invented the high five, bitch.
I'm sure he has stories about, like, the time he met Pele or something.
He probably has met Pele.
No,
that's the thing.
I am 100% certain he has met Pele.
Dusty Baker.
I have no idea if he did, but I'm certain he has.
I'm sure he's met David Beckham, Pele,
Maradona, all the goats.
Beckham's on his level. Maradona, Pele, they're on his level.
Twitch is saying Glenn Davis for coach. USMNT.
I will say this.
No, because we need him here at Soccer Matters. So.
I'll be okay.
They'll have to pay the buyout.
I would be okay if Glenn left for that.
Whoa.
That's a great job.
Whoa.
That's a great job.
Will he have to give up?
Also, why couldn't he do both?
Well, J.J. Redick gave up podcasting.
That's because J.J. Redick, I don't know.
Glenn Davis is one of the few people.
Glenn Davis built different.
That actually criticizes soccer the way that it should be criticized. And it really is a shame that we don't have, like, hand up. I don't pay that much attention to it. I would maybe if they were better. But there's only a few people that are constantly pointing at what the U.S. men's team and the Federation doesn't do. If you're Glenn Davis, you've got to be losing your mind that you've been saying the same things about this Federation or about the Dynamo, who are finally decent, forever and ever, and nothing seems to change, even though he is asking for things and criticizing things in a very polite and fair way.
It does feel like the what we went through with the Astros this year and last year with the Espada, Dusty Baker stuff. People have been having these same conversations about men's soccer in this country for 20 years.
Yeah,
I know.
Probably
longer.
Since they made the, quarterfinals in 02.
The sport of the future in 1970.
If you do a show like Glenn's, and you're criticizing these same criticisms
over and over.
Over and over and over and over again.
I'd go crazy.
Because they don't get any better.
It's Gallant and George. He's Joe George. I'm Paul Gallant. Sean Mabes behind the glass. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Big time Astros Mets series, baby. The Mets have won 11 of 13. The Astros have won 9 of 11. Who's going to be over 500 at the end of the weekend? It's Gallant and George. Stick around.